Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We've done the twist and the Lindy Hop. Now it's time to mosh. I'm John Schaefer, and coming up on Soundcheck, our series on dance crazes continues with a look at slam dancing and its roots in 1980s hardcore punk.
Now I came first, the thought of the man, quick in the shell, a busted up plan.
Also, that music scene gave rise to the Minutemen and their speedy do-it-yourself punk. Today, the group's bassist, Mike Watt, is a solo artist and a touring member of the Stooges and a photographer. He joins us with a new photo memoir. Plus, guitarist Bryce Dessner of The National tells us about the new music festival called Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, and some of the bands on the bill will join us to play live. All of that on Soundcheck after the news. Hey there, Soundcheck listener. No news in a podcast, but I do want to say thanks for downloading the Soundcheck podcast and ask for some feedback. The crew here at the show wants to know how we can improve the podcast experience for you. Tell us what you like or don't like, about how you find the podcast, how you share it with others, what's in the show, etc. Shoot us an email at soundcheck@wnyc.org. That's soundcheck@wnyc.org. Okay, back to the show. So Wilson Pickett famously recorded this song, The Land of a Thousand Dances, but there was one dance he couldn't anticipate. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, our series on dance fads continues with a dive into the mosh pit. Plus, bassist Mike Watt of the punk group Minutemen stops by to talk about a new photo memoir. And we get a sneak peek at the new music festival Crossing Brooklyn Ferry. But we begin in the pit. In the mosh pit. In the 1980s, audiences at hardcore punk shows began pushing, shoving, and ramming into each other, and slam dancing was born. Joining me here in the studio to give us a bit of the history of the mosh pit is Michael Azarad, author of Our Band Could Be Your Life. Michael, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, John.
So this dance, and we've already got a couple of listeners commenting, that's dancing, but let's leave that for the moment. This comes out of the early years of the punk movement.
Sure, yeah. And it, you know, basically comes out of pogoing, which was jumping up and down very vertically. And then later on, American kids started doing something called slamming, or slam dancing, which was horizontal, basically, bumping into people. It's a lot more violent and, you know, some would argue more fun.
Now, pogoing always struck me, we pogoed because there was no room to do anything else. To do slam, to like back up and charge into each other requires a little bit of space. So did this kind of grow as the scene developed and moved to somewhat bigger places?
Like the DC slamming, I think, started in, you know, school gyms and places where, you know, community centers and things where those shows kind of happened. So, and it was a pretty small community. So, yeah, it's very possible that they had very few people and a lot of space. But, you know, later on, of course, slam dancing started happening in very, very crowded situations.
Right. Now, as the 80s progressed and punk gets more hardcore, you see this kind of really more violent motion involved, starting, it seems, on the West Coast, then, as you say, D.C., and eventually up to New York. Now, Black Flag, would they have been sort of the progenitors of this thing?
Well, I don't know about Black Flag, but certainly some of the places that they played, particularly in Orange County in California, a lot of really rough and tough kind of people got attracted to that very rough and tough music, and they danced in a very rough and tough way. I think part of it was to annoy older punks. You know, the original punks were a bit older, and this new generation of kids was, you know, much younger and, you know, full of beans. And I think they really wanted to, you know, literally clear the older ones out of the room.
We're speaking with Michael Azarad, music critic, drummer, author of the book Our Band Could Be Your Life. We also spoke earlier today with Jack Rabid, who publishes the New York-based rock magazine The Big Takeover, about the first time he saw slam dancing in New York, and here's what he told us.
When Black Flag came to play the Peppermint Lounge in March of 1981, all the D.C. kids came up, and, you know, they'd all met Black Flag when they'd been out there, and, of course, they were the number one band of, like, the slam dancing L.A. scene, so when Black Flag came on, all the New York kids started to do their, you know, usual punk rock dance, and then all the D.C. kids started knocking them over, which had never happened to them before. So there was a good, like, 20-minute period there of fistfights, because when people aren't expecting to be knocked over, their reaction is to get up, find the person who did it, and then punch him in the face.
Dallas, Coward, ride the pole. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Make this sport, what we say. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Rise, stop, what we do. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. When they can't do it themselves. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Way up high, up your abuse. Try to stop us, it's no use. Society's on of control. Rise above, we're gonna rise above. Make this smart, can't think themselves. Rise above, we're gonna rise above.
That is the band Black Flag with Rise Above. You also heard the writer and publisher Jack Rabid talking about the first time he saw slam dancing here in New York at a Black Flag concert back in 1981. And Michael Azarad with me here in the studio. Was there something in the music or in the lyrics of the early hardcore movement that would incite this kind of movement?
Well, I mean, early hardcore was just way more aggressive than I think, you know, any other popular music has ever been, and it attracted a certain type of person, generally an aggressive person, generally a male person, generally a young male mm-hmm. person, and consequently the concerts, you know, got out of hand. In D.C., though, originally it was actually way more female-oriented. There were a lot more women moshing, and it was, you know, Cynthia Connolly, one of the original D.C. punks, told me actually for Our Band Could Be Your Life that it was a lot of fun to mosh. And then later, more violent kids started coming in and made it miserable for everybody. But originally, it was kind of a lot more fun.
And the bands themselves had somewhat ambivalent views of what was happening right at the foot of their stage.
Yeah, well, some obviously really loved it. When, like, Fear from L.A. played in 1981 on Saturday Night Live and actively encouraged, you know, moshing and caused a lot of damage, and it was a big scandal. But by 1983, Minor Threat, the vanguard, a hardcore band, was absolutely sick of it. They were sick of seeing people getting hurt. They were sick of getting their instruments trashed, and they really wanted it to chill out. And ever since then, bands have complained about it.
Now, do you draw a distinction between slam dancing and moshing?
I do. Moshing, to my mind, is an umbrella term for all those, you know, kind of post-hardcore audience participation moves. So, I mean, yes, there's slam dancing, there's crowd surfing, stage diving, a so-called skanking where you wave your arms and legs around wildly in the middle of a crowd. There are all kinds of the wall of death.
Don't know that one.
The wall of death, that's kind of a metal invention. It's when the singer says, okay, everybody, either line up to the left or the right, and you there's this massive rectangular space in the middle of the floor, and then the singer says, okay, now everybody run right at each other.
Well, that's like a group slam dance then.
Yes, yeah, but it's a very specific thing, John. It's a wall of death. You should try it sometime.
Yeah, maybe right after the show, you and me.
Awesome.
Michael Azarad's with me here in the studio. Our series all this week on dance crazes brings us today to, again, something that some of our listeners are questioning, whether this is dancing at all. I mean, it's sort of choreographed movement, you know? You have to do it. You have to know what you're doing. Otherwise, people can and will get hurt.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a physical expression of the music. There's no I mean, I would say, you know, that's to me, that's dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. You know, I really think partially. Well, Ian MacKay actually told me again
from Minor Threat.
Told me for Our Band Could Be Your Life that He said it was part of it was a reaction to the hustle and the bump and all those disco dance things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was also a reaction to, you know, hippie dancing, hardcore in general, you know, where hippies had long hair, punks had short hair. You know, when hippies had formless music, punk had very doctrinaire music. And everything was...
Well, especially in the case of Ian MacKaye and Minor Threat, everything about them was doctrinaire. You know, no meat, no alcohol, no booze,
yeah.
I mean, no drugs.
Yeah. So, you know... And
no slam dancing.
Yeah, but an extended hardcore originally was a reaction, I think, also just to the way that hippies danced, you know, and it was resolutely aggressive and asexual. It was just really completely opposite to what the hippies had done.
Mm-hmm. KP from New Jersey writes this comment on our webpage. A favorite college memory of mine, a Ramones concert on Syracuse University campus circa 1984. The Police ended the concert early when they felt the mosh pit was out of control and someone might get hurt. No one did, just a lot of mad, drunk college students. We're continuing to see that sort of thing. In fact, just recently in Boston, a flogging Molly concert was shut down by the police at Boston's House of Blues because they were allowing slam dancing during a concert. We'll actually hear a little bit from Flogging Molly as we wrap up here. But we've been speaking with Michael Azarad, the music critic and drummer. His book, Our Band Could Be Your Life, is a great look at the early years of the Indian alternative rock movements. And we've been talking about slam dancing on the program today. Michael, great to see you again.
Great to see you too, John.
Wall of Death after the show. You
awesome.
And me.
I'm right there.
This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck listeners, how do you feel about moshing or any of the dance crazes we've covered this week on Soundcheck? Lots of emails have been coming in already. You can send your stories and comments to soundcheck@wnyc.org. And up next, someone who's seen many a mosh pit, bassist Mike Watt, formerly of the punk band Minutemen. He stops by to share his new photo memoir. And later, a sneak preview of the upcoming Crossing Brooklyn Ferry Festival with curator Bryce Desner and some of the bands taking part. This is Soundcheck.
As strange as that must seem, it's best not to breathe.
It's been 40 years, still a hostage, new kind of fascist.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You may know Mike Watt from his years playing bass in this San Pedro punk trio, the Minutemen, or you may know his part-time job as bassist for Iggy Pop and the Stooges. But with the release of his new photo memoir, the world can now see Watt as he really is, a nature lover in a kayak at the crack of dawn taking pictures of the sunrise. The book is called Mike Watt, On and Off Bass, and I'm happy it brings Mike Watt to the Soundcheck studio. Mike, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me aboard.
Before we get too far away from Michael Azarad's conversation about slam dancing and mosh pits, got any war stories for us?
Well, I came from Virginia, but I moved to Pedro. Because when you go there, I want them to think that you came from there, too. So you'll say Pedro. You won't
right.
say Pedro. No, but that was very kind of you. And some of the pictures are on a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was I got lame knees. So the kayak, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and the kayak Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday on the bike.
Okay, so you're kind of working out different muscles on different days.
Yeah.
A good idea.
Well, it's just they get hurt. They get sore.
Mm-hmm.
And kayaks all waist up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do this. Let's see. I got a car at 16. So for 22 years, I never rode a bicycle. Yeah, I was an idiot. I thought that was for little kids, you know. And this cat was moving to Atlanta. He sold me a 10-speed for $5. And I remember seeing so many of his clothes racks in people's paths. I was like, no. I'm going to actually pedal this. Now, when? It's been a while. Why? It started coming on where I was waking up earlier and earlier. Harder to hold, you know.
Yeah.
So, and also getting tired earlier. And also, maybe not as many people see me wipe out. Maybe the town's more my own. Now, Pedro is a harbor of Los Angeles, so we're a weird mixture of the end of the land and industry.
Right.
Like Malibu with hammerheads.
Although you don't seem to take too many industrial shots. You seem to focus more on the nature.
I would like that. Sometimes they have to suffer through it, though. You see some of those cranes. You see some of them canned boats. And but, yeah, Pedro's kind of strange because we're west, but we're on a – what's that called? Peninsula. So we face east. So all my pictures are sunrises. So this thing of the early morning, yeah, I was first to guard my – so-called pride, so they don't see me crash as much and maybe not as many vehicles. But then I should be out at this time. There's something about the orange-yellow light. At the same time was digital cameras.
So
that was a big diff. In the old days, right, you bought the camera. That was first payment. Then there was the film and developing.
Right.
Digital.
So do people know? I mean, did people who followed your music career over the years, did they know that there was this side of you that you...
Slowly I got brave enough about the peddling in the paddling or the pictures. Or both.
Just letting people know that this was a part of you.
With the pewter, and maybe this comes in on it too, because the email comes on and you have flow lists and you start flowing things. I flow the shots. Here's where I live. Here's what, you know, some people send their babies. Here's how the sun looks like. here's a sea lion. Here's a peregrine. I got one of a peregrine falcon. That's 200 miles an hour. That's the fastest animal in the world. And there he was. The thing about this, compared to the other side of me, I put together with the bass and stuff, compose, almost like stage man for a play or something. This I cannot set up. Nature has her way. So I just got to be ready, like that peregrine, right?
Right.
Of course, after the first shot, he stared me in the eye and started preening himself. Like, you're going to get the whole, like meeting Jonathan Winters in the grocery store. You're going to get 20 minutes, right? It was intense.
Have you met Jonathan Winters in the grocery
store? No, but I've heard some stories. I don't live in Hollywood. We're 30 miles south.
Yeah. Mike Watt is with me, the bassist who's played with the Minutemen and Firehose and the Stooges, and his book is On and Off Bass. And in addition to, Mike, to your photos, each one is accompanied, well, most of them are accompanied by excerpts from your tour diaries. There are some poems as well.
Yeah.
You invoke the name of John Coltrane several times.
Well, there's a picture of him when he was a sailor.
The little button on your shirt.
Yeah.
Okay. So was he, I mean, when I think of like the Minutemen, where a song that lasted a full minute was a rarity, you know, and then here's Coltrane sort of with this expansive, I mean, was he
Well, look
a
what's happened to me.
I've
written three operas, which I would have never imagined coming from my tradition.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, when you say opera, I mean, some people might look at those things and say, well, that's more of a song cycle, but the idea that there's a narrative,
they want to say that. It's one song in many parts.
Right.
If they want to, well, what'd they call Tommy? Nobody cuts him any slack. They cut him slack on that. Watt's got to always. That's all right. That's all right. I'll live by other.
Let me play some for the folks who are listening from Hyphenated Man. This is Mike Watt from one of those operas. This is called Arrow Pierced Eggman.
Michelle, a busted up plan. Three pieces, broken a beer, stuffed in the head, spit it out here.
That is Mike Watt, Arrow-Pierced Eggman from Hyphenated Man. This is your third opera?
Yeah, and that was the first of 30 parts. I'm going to do one more tour, but I'll be back here in the fall with it. And we really know it now. It was hard to learn. Now, you asked me about John Coltrane. Raymond Pettibone played me. I met John Coltrane through punk. I grew up Navy housing. I didn't know what bebop was. In fact, when I first heard Coltrane, I thought, I knew he was a little older, and I thought it was just, this is how older dudes do punk. I didn't know he was dead. I didn't know there was a scene from the 40s, you know, it went through the 50s and 60s. I had no idea. It was the emotional content. I thought, okay, so I feel kind of a debt to the movement, but also cats like him.
Mm-hmm. Now, and when you say the movement, you mean the punk movement.
Yeah.
You also mentioned Navy housing. Your dad was
sailor.
In the
He's
Navy.
A machinist mate.
Okay. Is that why, well, I mean, I know living in San Pedro, you are by the water, but still, you know, this kind of nautical bent.
Latin guys say Pedro too, okay.
Yeah, all right, okay.
No, I was Virginia, right? I was born there, the big Navy base in Newport News. Mm-hmm. And Pedro was closer to Vietnam.
Right.
So we got the orders in 67. They said, you're going to report in 30 days.
How old were you?
10.
Yeah.
And that's where I meet D. Boone a couple years later. So all my music history's there.
D. Boone, with whom you founded the Minutemen.
Yeah.
The book, I mean, D. Boone died in that car crash a long time ago now. Yeah. It's got to be 25, 26 years, something like that. The book's dedicated to him, so clearly that memory lingers and still is important to you.
I wouldn't be doing any of this without him. His mother actually put me on base. I had to move from the Navy housing to the Proj. And it was early 70s.
The Proj being the projects?
Yeah. We like to brief.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of guns yet, but there was some fighting and stuff. So his mom wanted us after school in the pad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was Arena Rock. Our first gig was C&T Rex. We didn't know about clubs till punk. So we never had any ideas we were going to get to do gigs like that. It was kind of Econo childcare, you know.
Right.
Keep us in the pad.
Now, let me... Your podcast, I mean, with all the abbreviations and stuff, or actually it's your website. Your intro goes, I live in Pedro, I work the thud staff, I jam Econo. You want to translate that into English for us?
Well, there's more than one Mike Watt in this world, so I wanted to help people.
All right, I live in Pedro means I live in San Pedro, California.
Yeah.
I work the thud staff.
Yeah.
I'm
the bass man.
All right, so that's your nickname.
I'm the glue.
For the,
you know,
the
most
bass
people
clef
go
and,
in the head. Or the bathroom, you would probably, mm-hmm. except maybe, yeah, not for a bath, maybe. And they look at the tile, right?
Right.
Well, I'm the grout. I'm in between the tile. And then
I
jam Econo. That means you don't need a lot of bones. We got it from the Ford van. It was called the Econo line.
Right.
I hear next summer is the last ones. They're stopping it.
They're stopping that? Where will you sleep?
August. I know. I'm going to get the last one. I heard August 2013, the last one rolls out, and I'm going to get one of those. They last me at least 10 years, so I'll be good into my 60s.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Mike Watt, the bassist from, in the past, the Minutemen, Firehose, the Stooges. And, you know, I referred before to the fact that Minutemen songs did not overstay their welcome. This one, from 1981's The Punchline, clocks in at 38 seconds long.
And 1,000 years ago, more legends were ever told. Almost 18 stood erect, mind empty and mind fresh. Get in love and hate, get in God and anti-God.
History lesson from the Minutemen from the 1981 album, The Punchline, and some of your poems and diary entries in the new book are also fairly brief. You know, they get to the point pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
How did you match up what you wrote to the photos that...
I didn't. You know, like you say, I'm a thud staff worker.
No, you say that. I say you're a bassist.
Okay, whoever's saying this, I'm a little more secure at that occupation. This is a new thing for me.
Yeah, yeah.
The pictures and the diaries I actually do is therapy to keep focus on the tour. They're so embarrassing, I can't reread them. I would like, if some young people want to, wow, this idiot's seeing this stuff, maybe I should see some stuff firsthand. So I do have that altruistic mm-hmm. part. But I didn't feel secure. Picking the pictures... You know where it came? Last year, there was a show in Santa Monica at Track 16 Gallery. They asked me to show. I'd never seen these things printed, you know?
Uh-huh.
And here's a bunch of them. Will you pick 35? And this lady, Lori Steeling, did it. And then Peter and Kat, with Three Rooms Pest, They wanted to juxtapose spiel. Words, writing, diary. And I had them. I thought it'd be too heavy hand or ham bone for me to massage the whole image, especially something I'm not that, even though I've been doing it a while, it was something to share.
And when you saw your own photos up on a gallery wall?
That was a trip. That was a trip.
What'd you think?
My ma came too. She was like, look, Michael Watt.
Your mom calls you Michael Watt.
Always.
I love that.
And she goes, look at this. It was almost like, you know, when they come to the Little League game, even if you strike out, you're three whiffers. And it's like, look what you did.
Let me read you a comment from one of our listeners, John in Long Branch, New Jersey. I met Mike when he, and he calls you Mike, not Michael Watt. Okay. I met Mike when he was playing for Porno for Pyros.
This is
Perry Farrell's side
group. Sure.
And my group, John says, opened up the show at our school in St. Louis back in 96. He approached me and said, hey, bass guy, how you doing? I'll never forget such a down-to-earth guy, not to mention great player.
Wow, very.
Now, do you bass players stick together?
Yeah. Well, you know, in the old days, there was a huge hierarchy thing. In fact, only one song as a teenager. It was called Mr. Bass, King of Outer Space, and it was about blowing the whole band off with a bass hole. Because bass was right field in Little League. It was where you put the retarded friend, you know? Punk had a lot to do with changing that.
Yeah.
In fact, D. Boone, putting together the Minutemen, that's why he played all trebly and stuff. He said, let's put political ideas in how we set up the band. And he played all trebly and no power chords just so the bass and the drums could come up.
Everybody had their own space.
Yeah, he said, it's like building an economy. We got to have it equal and this kind of stuff. And I was into it.
Now, you're doing a show tonight at Le Poisson Rouge here in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Mike Watt and Friends.
You know who used to be there? That used to be the Village Gate. Mr. Coltrane used to work there.
That's right. But it's been LPR, Le Poisson Rouge, for a few years now.
Sure.
When it was the Elbow Room. It was what?
There was a period where it was Elbow Room. It was the first time I played my first opera for a little period.
Okay.
98 or 97.
Well, when I see Mike Watt and Friends, that could mean anything. I mean, you know, literally almost any. You've played with so many people over
these
the years.
These friends is Jay and Murph mainly.
From Dinosaur Jr.
And then 12 years ago, I did this after that sickness almost killed me. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's a weird echo.
You had like a lower abdominal infection.
I call it the illness on the root
illness,
page.
Yeah.
The illness in quotes. But this thing almost killed me, and I was only 42. I had a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. So I thought, get back. Well, it's the first time I had to stop playing bass since I started with D. Boone. Because they had tubes in me.
Mm-hmm.
And when they pulled them out and I could play again, I was atrophied. I panicked. I literally panicked. So just started doing stooges to get, there's not a lot of chord changes, but
right.
a lot of feel. And I asked Jay and Murph if they'd play with me. And I asked Peter and Perk from Porno to do some West Coast ones.
Porno for Pyros.
Right. Yeah, this is the first time I worked for another man's band.
Mm-hmm.
I've only done it three times, Jay, Perry, and Ig.
And even when you had sort of collaborative things, like in the mid-90s, you did something with like Dave Grohl and
48 different
Eddie
dudes.
Vedder, and
that was
all
a test
under
of the
your
bass.
Name.
Well, I thought if the bass player knew the song, anyone could come in and do drums and sing it. And I thought of the studio as a wrestling rink, and I was bringing these guys in the wrestling rink, and no practice, just bring them in, and so it was called Ball Hog or Tugboat.
Oh, there was a name
of the album. I guess that's a proj. It was what I was trying to do because I'd only been in band situations, Minuteman, and then Pyros was kind of like Minuteman without D. Boone, right?
I
had this one weird thing that's still going, Dose, for 26 years, just two bases.
Two bases.
But that's total victory, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about hierarchy with that.
Victory for the Thud Staff.
Yeah.
The Thud Staffers. Mike Watt and Friends is happening tonight at LPR, Le Poisson Rouge, here in New York. The book, will you do a reading tonight?
Byron Cole's going to ask me some questions. Thurston's going to come
sing.
So there'll
be some Q&A.
There's going to be some guys going to sing.
From Sonic Youth. Okay.
Yeah. Boy, Steve's going to play drums, too, I heard, the Sonic.
Right.
And
Steve Shelley.
Right.
You're exhausting me, having to complete not only your words, but the names.
You know how to do it, though. You read me good. Most cats think I'm from planet Mars.
When, in fact, you're from Pedro. From San Pedro, California, it's Mike Watt, the bassist, author. His book is called Mike Watt, On and Off Bass. Thanks for being with us on Soundcheck.
Respect.
Up next, a look at the new music festival Crossing Brooklyn Ferry with curator and guitarist from The National, Bryce Dessner, and a few of the musicians who are on the bill. They'll play live for us next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Bryce Dessner is probably best known as one of the twin guitarists in the popular indie rock band The National. But he's also part of this new music chamber ensemble that you're hearing called Clogs. And with his brother Aaron, he's a founder of the Music Now Festival in Cincinnati. This week, the Dessner twins are curating a three-day festival at the Brooklyn Academy of Music with the Walkmen, St. Vincent, Beirut, the Jack String Quartet, and the two artists who will be playing for us today, songwriter Jarek Bischoff, whom you'll meet shortly, and the band People Get Ready. Bryce Dessner joins us to preview Crossing Brooklyn Ferry. Hey, Bryce.
Nice to see you, John.
So what's behind the title here, Cross? That's from Walt Whitman, isn't it?
It is a Walt Whitman poem.
From Leaves of Grass.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, we spent a lot of time thinking about titles. Originally, Bam wanted to call it, you know, Music Now Brooklyn, mm-hmm. which we didn't feel like that fit, and we didn't want to do, you know, just make this an iteration of what we're doing in Cincinnati. So that poem is actually something my brother had been thinking about doing something with musically for a while, and then we just decided that, you know, it has this really playful energy to it, and it talks about Brooklyn, it talks about Manhattan, it talks about, you know, living in these places, and also kind of curiously, he keeps talking about those people in 100 years, 100 years later, even 100
right.
years after that, that will feel the same kind of, I think he calls it the curious questionings from within. And we felt like it just had like a kind of perfect feeling for making a festival around it.
So is there, I mean, aside from the fact that everybody seems to be based in Brooklyn, was there, as curators, were you and Aaron looking for something in particular? Is there kind of a through narrative or thread through these 3 days?
I mean, I think the main through narrative is that we chose artists we really like. We were trying to make it fairly broad musically, which I think is representative of Brooklyn. Obviously, I mean, it's a snapshot of a culture that's really thriving.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all the music happening in Brooklyn,
right?
You know, but we tried to include you know, people from different corners, different little communities of musicians. And I think the two artists here today, you know, People Get Ready and Jarek, are really quite actually emblematic of what's happening, you know.
And it goes all the way to, you know, the sort of the indie classical people like So Percussion. I mentioned the Jack Quartet. Tell us about People Get Ready and why they're part of the proceedings. They're on tomorrow night's show at BAM.
Yeah, People Get Ready are playing tomorrow night, and they're just a really infectious you know, pop band that make awesome songs. They also have an interest in performance and a background in dance. And that's
right.
kind of, I think, you know, that combining these things and this sort of new approach to putting on shows is, I think, is something that's really happening in Brooklyn. And they're kind of at the forefront of doing that, so that, you know, we are really excited to have them involved.
Now, Crossing Brooklyn Ferry is a three-part music festival opening tomorrow and running through Saturday here in New York at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in their various halls. And People Get Ready is here. That it's their amp that you've heard humming in the background while Bryce and I have been talking. Here they are to play a song called Uncanny. It's People Get Ready live on Soundcheck. That is the band People Get Ready in a live performance of a song called Uncanny. Stephen Recker singing and playing guitar, Jen Goma singing and playing keyboards, James Rickman playing guitar, and Luke Fasano playing the drums here in the Soundcheck studio. And once again, they are part of Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, the new music festival at BAM the next three nights, curated by Bryce and Aaron Dessner. And Stephen Recker at the microphone. So Bryce was saying before, you know, there's some background in performance art and dance. You've done some of both of those things, right?
Yeah, I have a history in that. I mainly came to New York working as a dancer for various projects and so forth.
And wasn't People Get Ready, before it was the name of this band, wasn't it the name of a show or a project?
It was a show that we did at the Kitchen, and it was just kind of happened that we called it People Get Ready. And then it was the name of the project, and that just evolved into being a band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, do you tend to keep those art forms, do you keep your dance side separate from your music side, separate from the performing art side, or is it all one thing to you?
It's kind of coming together slowly but surely. I mean, we're definitely trying to straddle both of those kind of things, those worlds where, yeah, we want to put a record, we're going to put a record out come the summer with Brassland Records, and but we're also doing, you know, shows and productions that are involving those songs with performance work.
Now, Bryce, the Crossing Brooklyn Ferry Festival is not just music. I mean, similarly, it has another component, a visual one.
Yeah, I think when we were asked to do something, the first thing we thought of was we wanted to commission some new work, because really, I mean, BAM stands out really in the world as like such a pioneer and a risk taker of commissioning new work. And that's the experience that we've primarily had there. So we wanted the festival not just to be, I mean, obviously it's a collection of incredible bands, but we also wanted it to be some premieres of things there. So what we came up with was, you know, the other idea was just another theme for the festival in Brooklyn is this idea of collaboration. And so we decided to do it, you know, to take over one of the cinemas in the BAM Rose Cinemas and commission 9 new films with new scores. So that's for me, that's a really important component of what we're doing.
All right. Now, the festival, Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, music and film, takes place in the Opera House, the BAM Cafe, the Rose Studios, from Thursday through Saturday night at BAM. If you're interested in the artists you're hearing on Soundcheck today, you have a bit of a quandary because they're both playing tomorrow night in separate places. People Get Ready at 7:30 in the BAM Cafe. Tomorrow night at 7, though, it's Jarek Bischoff. Now, how does give us the curator's take on Jarek and why he's in this festival?
Jarek is, you know, I think one of these incredible artists who's kind of hard to pin down where he is. He's a composer. He's a songwriter. He's a great arranger. He also produces. Actually, People Get Ready's new record. He's involved in producing that. And so he's, you know, he's also going to be premiering a bunch of stuff. Not premiering, but it's all music for his new record that he's going to do tomorrow night. So he, you know, there's going to be some super special guest tomorrow night as well with him that we can't announce on the radio, but I might guess who it might be, but we'll let him talk about that. So, I mean, Jarek is singular and individual in what he does, but he's also kind of emblematic of the type of music we really wanted to host at BAM.
And plugged into a community, as you mentioned, working with Stephen and People Get Ready on producing their record. Do you find that a lot, that people keep working with each other on others' projects? And
I think so, and I think that you know, one important thing that we've tried to say about this festival is that it isn't all that we're all hanging out having a barbecue at my house or something. I mean, these are artists that
although that happens,
it does occasionally happen. But you know, there's a lot of artists I don't personally know. There's artists, you know. We're very fortunate to have both People Get Ready and Jarek on the Brassland label, which is the label that we run, my brother and I, together with Alec Bemis. But I think what we wanted to really get across is that Brooklyn is a very open environment. And I think the reason people are drawn here is because there is so much diversity, musical diversity, and that it does feel like, you know, you can reach out to people and work with them, and people from across genres, you know, collaborating and that type of thing. tends to happen a lot.
So Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, Thursday through Saturday at BAM in their various spots. And Jarek Bischoff is here with not only his ukulele, but with a string quartet. And they're going to do a version of his song, The Nest. The title is not the only avian imagery that you will hear in this song. Here's a live performance on Soundcheck.
Never get to taste it of fruits and of flowers and vines I had planted with pride, and now you intend to waste it. I meant to harvest and feed you, my mouth to your mouth I would please you, but I was cast out of that nest. Chest, this bird heart, and the rest of the same salty wounds of the holes that were left. Oh, you grew small and died, and you refused to try. You were so awfully brave. And so I've chosen far away from each tree that
That is a song by Jarek Bischoff called The Nest, and it featured Jarek playing the ukulele, the string quartet consisting of Tom Swafford on violin, Timba Harris also violin, Karen Walchuk the viola, Waltuck. Brent Arnold playing, what is it? Sorry.
Oh, Waltuck.
Waltuck, sorry. And Brent Arnold playing the cello. Jarek, first of all, beautiful song.
Thank you.
And as if to prove the point Bryce was making before about, you know, people working together, you borrowed People Get Ready's singer, one of their singers, Jen Goma, on that as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, you are both a songwriter and a composer. Do you draw a distinction between those two things?
No, I came through, came to calling myself a composer through songwriting and recording bands like People Get Ready and my own stuff, and people would start saying, hey, maybe we should throw a violin on here, maybe we should throw a trombone on here. And then, you know, I worked on this record by a band called Parenthetical Girls, where we just started adding more and more and more stuff until finally I was like, whoa, I wrote this out,
it would almost be symphonic.
Yeah, it would be. And so it was through recording bands that I learned how to compose.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, your album is called Composed.
Exactly.
Kind of a statement of intent there.
I hope, yeah.
All right. Now, Jarek is performing at the Opera House at BAM tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. It's the opening night of the three-day music festival called Crossing Brooklyn Ferry that Bryce and Aaron Dessner are curating. And Bryce, quickly, you know, it used to be that in Brooklyn, you know, everyone was sort of living in the shadow of Manhattan, and you had that kind of freedom, therefore, to experiment and to do things a little differently. Now it seems like the whole music world is, like, intent on Brooklyn. Do you feel the weight of expectation? Does it make it harder somehow?
I don't think so. I mean, we've been living there for 15 years, and we've been through various waves of Brooklyn, you know. I think most recently probably was few years ago with, like, I think it was Animal Collective, and there was a bunch of big records, and so we would get asked about this Brooklyn thing or whatever, and it, you know, I think there's been musicians calling Brooklyn home, like you said, for such a long time, and it still has those qualities that, you know, I mean, obviously cheaper rents is, like, the biggest, and space to rehearse is probably the two biggest things, but yeah, I mean, if anything, what I can say is, you know, BAM opening up their doors to all these, you know, great bands, some well-known, some not so well-known.
Right.
And taking a risk to ask us to do it is certainly like a great moment. You know?
Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, three nights of music and film, the Z's, the Walkmen, St. Vincent, Sharon Van Etten, the Jack String Quartet, Beirut, lots of other bands, including Jarek Bischoff, some of his sort of orchestral pop in the background as we wrap things up on the show today. People Get Ready, Jarek Bischoff, Bryce Dessner, thank you all for being with us on Soundcheck.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for today's program. Tomorrow, we hear about the wave of Cuban and Latin dance crazes that swept New York City as we continue our week-long series on dance fads. That was a mid-20th century craze. But we'll also look at the 1995 mega hit The Macarena. Also tomorrow, songwriter and producer Santigold talks about her long-awaited new album, Master of My Make-Believe. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, the program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn with Margaret Bresnahan. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Amy Pearl. I'm John Schaefer. Tune in tomorrow for another Soundcheck.